welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Continuing series in this hour, later on, The Man in the Iron Mask, Firefighters, and the Adventures of Marco Polo. But first, it's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with episode 1 of 5 of The Lorco Diamonds Matter, from November 7th, 1955 on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Ben Tyler, Johnny. Transworld Fidelity.
Oh, hi, Ben.
Are you free at present?
If the price is right.
I mean, are you on a job?
It's beginning to sound like it.
Can you be on a plane for Algiers in 2 hours?
Sure. Who's the client?
Lorco Limited, Amsterdam. You know, they're the...
Diamond Cutters, an old firm. Big-time deals all over the world.
Check.
What happened?
Oh, one of their couriers just dropped dead in the Algiers airport.
Oh, too bad.
He was carrying a briefcase with $100,000 worth of set stones. Top-grade diamonds.
Don't tell me, Ben. Let me guess.
That's right, Johnny. The briefcase is missing.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Transworld Fidelity Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during investigation of the Lorco Diamonds matter. Item 1, $324.60, transportation. A routine plane flight to North Africa and the city of Algiers. It was an easy trip, and I felt relaxed and comfortable. A feeling that was rudely terminated about 10 seconds after I got off the plane.
You are Monsieur Dollar, are you not?
Yeah, that's right.
I am Inspector Marcus of the Algerian Customs Police.
Oh, how are you, Inspector?
Oh, quite well, Monsieur, and vastly reassured now that you have arrived on the scene of the crime.
Oh?
You see, I have implicit faith in special investigators. I have encountered them in the past, so I have no doubt but this little affair will prove most simple to you, Monsieur.
I see.
I feel that in a mere matter of hours, voila, you will produce the guilty culprit like un lapin out of a chapeau.
Inspector, I'm beginning to feel a cold wind from the north. That's odd for this time of year, isn't it?
A mere passing breeze, Monsieur. I shall now assume my official attitude.
And that is?
Extreme courtesy, complete cooperation, and the devoted service of my meager talents. On orders, you understand, from my superiors in Paris. And now, Monsieur, if you will accompany me to my office.
Delighted to. After you, Alphonse.
My name is Pierre.
Oh, sorry. Just a whimsy.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. I have heard the joke. Both jokes.
Uh-huh.
This way, Monsieur. A man from the Lorco Diamond Firm is waiting for us. A special representative, so he informs me. And so, since you yourself are a special investigator, I could perceive a certain advantage in letting him give you the facts, as I believe you say it in the States.
Tie our tails together, sit back, and watch the fur fly, is that it?
Well, he is a trifle excitable, but your metaphor, however, escapes me.
Oh, I doubt that, Inspector Marcus. In fact, I doubt if much of anything escapes you.
You are too kind.
Except, of course, $100,000 worth of diamonds.
I spoke too hastily.
Vanished, disappeared, right under your nose.
But there were extenuating circumstances.
Oh, I'll bet there were. Tell me something confidentially. Did your superiors in Paris really blow their tops?
Monsieur Dollar, if I may borrow one of your more colorful expressions, they said I had probably goofed.
I'd met that same attitude before with local officials. To them, sending in an outsider implied they couldn't do the job themselves. And Inspector Marcus was on an even hotter spot. The air terminal was a port of entry to Algeria, under his jurisdiction, Customs Police. As he said, he'd goofed. Maybe.
It is a matter which hath entire past all apprehension.
But he was right on one thing. Hans Zeindorf, the Lorco representative, was a trifle excitable.
In Amsterdam, it is unthinkable such thing have happened like this. Even in your New York, mein Herr Dollar, it cannot have happened. But here, in Algiers...
It have happened.
Yeah, this beautiful diamond gone. All gone. It's like barbarians. This Africa is no place for diamonds.
Maybe you ought to tell them that in Kimberley.
It's differently there. It's entire different.
All right, Mr. Zeindorf. Suppose you tell me just what happened.
Who can know, Mynheer? 15 years, this courier has worked for Lorco Company. We are think he is trustworthy. Entire trustworthy.
Well, even a trustworthy man can die of heart failure.
Ah, but he has never had these heart failing before.
All right, but...
Perhaps it would be better if I were to, with your permission, of course, Monsieur Zeindorf.
Yeah. You tell. I am not talk this English much good.
Precisely. These are the facts, Monsieur Deller. The Lorco courier, a man named Paul Gruber, arrived on the plane from Amsterdam yesterday morning.
Yeah.
Did you know he was arriving?
I did not know, but the point is a very clever one. So, a short while before landing, Monsieur Gruber was taken suddenly ill. A doctor met the plane, and the stricken man was removed by stretcher and taken to the emergency clinic. In 20 minutes, monsieur, he was dead. Diagnosis, heart failure. Mais, c'est la vie.
Was there an autopsy, Inspector?
Another excellent point, Monsieur Deller.
Thank you.
Do not mention it. An autopsy is being performed this afternoon.
Good. So the courier died. And then the briefcase?
It was delivered along with his other personal effects, unopened, to the customs property agent here at the airport.
And his name, the property agent?
André Jourdain. He was very busy at the moment, left the briefcase lying on his desk, intending at the first opportunity to register and place it in the vault.
But the opportunity didn't come, is that it?
Precisely. Only a few minutes later, I heard a gunshot. Monsieur, he was lying on the floor in a pool of blood. He had been struck on the head. The briefcase was gone.
All gone. This beautiful diamond gone entire.
Yeah. When did you find out what was in the briefcase, Inspector?
Almost 2 hours later. I radioed the local firm in Amsterdam, informing them of the death of their employee. They replied immediately and stated that the briefcase contained $100,000 worth of diamonds and pieces.
Works of art. Beautiful. One brooch, one necklace, 2 bracelets.
Precisely. Yes. The jewelry was being flown here on approval for examination by a prospective buyer.
Name of the buyer?
The Countess Maria de Tolia.
What do you know about her?
Monsieur Deller. If you had seen her, you would not ask. She is exquisite, lovely, chic, charming, spirited, full of the joie de vivre.
And no doubt loaded with potatoes.
With a woman like that, who would ever inquire?
I would. Since it looks as though she might be the only person in Algiers who knew that $100,000 worth of jewelry was coming in on that plane.
May we. But she could not have known that the courier was going to drop dead in the airport.
A good point, Inspector.
Merci, monsieur.
What about that property agent, André Jourdain? Any chance of talking to him?
But of course, if he is yet able to talk.
Then I guess I'll...
Talking is not enough, my dear.
Relax, Mr. Zeindorf. You're covered by insurance.
Insurance is money. It's not my diamonds.
Oh, well, if you don't want the money, you can always waive your claim.
Waive my... My dear Dollar, are you think that I am crazily? That I am entire crazily?
I talked to the plane crew who'd come in on the flight with the dying courier. I talked to Inspector Marcus's men who'd been with him when he found the property agent lying on the floor of his office. I didn't expect much, and I got just that. But it didn't matter. I figured I may have had my man spotted already. The same old story. An ambitious and underpaid government agent opening a briefcase to register its contents and seeing the diamonds there for the taking, hiding them quickly, then a fake slugging and firing a gun at a non-existent thief. Yeah, an old story. Expense account item 2, $3.40. Transportation into town and taxi fare to the hospital of Our Lady of Sorrows. Inspector Marcus had phoned ahead to authorize my visit. One of the sisters led me down the corridor to the door of André Jourdain's room. She motioned silently and then turned away. I stepped inside and closed the door.
Monsieur?
You're André Jourdain?
Oui. But yes, what do you want?
My name is Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator. My company is the underwriter on the Lorco Diamonds.
Why have you come here?
Well, to ask a couple of questions. Of course, if you'd like to consult an attorney before you...
I have nothing to conceal, monsieur. What do you wish to know?
Just exactly what happened when that briefcase disappeared.
I have told it already to Inspector Marcus.
Yes, I know. So now would you mind telling it to me?
But there is no... Bien. I was working at the files when someone entered my office. I turned around and saw a man standing there, pointing a gun at me.
Ever seen him before?
No, monsieur.
What did he look like?
Well, he was quite tall.
Heavy set?
No, very thin, tall and thin. European, I believe.
All right. What did he do?
He ordered me to turn around, stepped up behind me, struck me with a gun. I fell against my desk. He grabbed the briefcase and ran to the door.
You were still conscious?
Oui, monsieur, but in terrible pain. I fumbled for my gun in the drawer of the desk and fired one shot. It is all I can remember.
Uh-huh. You hadn't by any chance opened that briefcase?
I had been too busy.
And you didn't know what was in it?
Not until they told me today.
Andre, I wonder if you'd mind if I lifted a corner of that bandage and took a look at that wound on your head.
If you are careful, it is very painful.
Oh, sure, I'll be careful. Lie still now, please. It'll just take a second. I'll lift this edge and...
I think I am lucky to be alive.
Ah, very lucky. Okay, thanks.
It is nothing.
Andre, do you happen to know the Countess d'Atelier?
The Countess? Oh, monsieur, she is unquestionably...
Yeah, I know. She's lovely, exquisite, charming, chic. Well, thanks for your cooperation, Andre.
A pleasure, Monsieur Dollar.
Take care of that head. It's the only one you've got.
You Americans are so whimsical.
Oh, yeah, we're all crazily, entire crazily. My pet theory was starting to limp. That slugging wasn't phony. It had taken 14 stitches to close the cut in Andre's head. Whoever hit him hadn't been kidding. They meant it for keeps. I walked down the corridor and stood waiting for the elevator, thinking it over, trying to figure it out. But no go. I needed more facts. And a moment later, I got more facts.
Monsieur Dollar, I thought I would find you here.
A clever piece of deduction, Inspector.
Merci bien, monsieur.
Don't mention it. What's on your mind?
There should be something.
Well, there's got to be some reason for that smug grin. What happened? Did the thief confess?
Au contraire. I was on the point of asking what progress you were making on the case.
You will be happy to hear none at all.
Oh, that is too bad.
Inspector.
Eh?
Extreme courtesy, complete cooperation, the devoted services of your meager talents. Remember?
Touché, touché. Actually, I came to tell you that I now had the report of the autopsy. The courier who died of heart failure. Only he did not die of heart failure, monsieur. Except, of course, in a very literal sense.
Well, what did he die of?
Poison.
Well, that was the end of a good theory. The courier had started to get sick on the plane, so the robbery and the murder had been planned well in advance of his arrival. By somebody who'd known he was bringing in diamonds. And so far, only one person fit the bill. As lovely, charming, and chic a suspect as you could ever hope to meet. The Countess d'Atelier.
There'll be another intriguing episode in our story of the Lorco Diamonds matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, a lovely woman lies beautifully, and a sinister whisper drifts out of the Casbah. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcrived in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday, from November 7th, 1955, on CBS. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for Episode 6 of The Adventures of Marco Polo, a syndicated recording from 1940.
Present The Adventures of Marco Polo. Marco Polo and his companions recovered from the fit of madness which they had undergone by taking the drug hashish. Prince Alauddin, the old man of the mountain, was most disappointed that none of the Venetians had killed each other, but he refused to allow them to leave the castle. While he was giving them his instructions, the alarm was sounded, and the robber castle was attacked by the soldiers of the Khan of Persia. Immediately, the inhabitants of the castle prepared for battle, while Marco Polo and his companions wandered around the grounds. Marco Polo discovered a little path, and he realized by climbing a high rock he would be able to scale a high wall at the back of the castle. He scaled the wall and went to try and communicate with the Khan of Persia. Some little time later, Prince Alauddin came upon Niccolo Polo and Maffeo and their servant Benno. He questioned them about Marco and told them to bring him to his presence at once. Niccolo, Maffeo, and Benno hastily went to the apartment which had been set apart for them at the castle.
What can we do? The old man of the mountain demands to speak with Marco.
I knew Marco would not return.
It was the only way in which he could attempt to gain help, Master Maffeo.
Come here, Maffeo. Look you out of the casement. See, they have remarkable machines like catapults for hurling molten lead down on their enemies.
I have observed the machines. What chance has anyone of breaking into this castle?
One chance, and one chance only. That is by that small, tortuous track leading to the rear wall of the castle. Let us hope and pray that Marco manages to lead the Persian soldiers up that track.
It is hopeless, I tell you, Niccolo. The old man of the mountain is demanding to see Marco. When he finds he's escaped, we'll all be put to death.
We must fight for time. I cannot think that our lives are to end this way. Marco will save us yet.
Marco only thought to make good his own escape. He cares nothing for us.
You shall not say that of my son. Marco is risking his life to save us. It is impossible for the three of us to scale over that wall.
Oh, my masters, we are indeed lost. The old man of the mountain comes now.
Let me speak to him.
Well, where is Marco Polo? The tall, strong young man. He is needed in my fighting forces. Did I not tell you I demand to see him?
Oh, mighty prince, I thought that my son was here, but it seems that he is wandering somewhere about the castle grounds. Mayhap he is taking orders from one of your captains.
I did not see him. I have just inspected my soldiers and my defenses. I saw no sign of Marco Polo.
Oh, my son Marco has an adventurous spirit. He loves fighting and soldiering. No doubt you will find him among your soldiers, ready to do battle for you, most noble prince.
Marco Polo said he would not fight for me. Even the hashish could not arouse the bloodlust in him.
Mayhap he has changed his mind, Most High.
He must be found. I desire to speak with him at once. Oh, the enemy are making their first attack.
They shall be ruthless.
What think you of my machines of war, Niccolo Polo?
They are indeed wondrous machines, O Most High.
Streams of molten lead are being hurled upon the invaders. Great rocks are being forced down in their midst. I have no fear. This castle has stood the test of many attacks. I must go to direct my men in the fight. But I order you to find Marco Polo. Send him to my presence at once.
Piccolo, what can we do?
We have gained a little time. Mayhap the old man of the mountain will stay with his soldiers now, striving to repel the attackers.
It is fortunate he did not make us for him. I have no desire to hurl molten lead upon my fellow men.
We must go into the grounds of the castle. Move about, so that the prince cannot find us and talk with us. If we can keep away from him for several hours, there may be some chance of Marco returning with help. Come, let us leave here. The prince must not know where to find us.
Meanwhile, Marco Polo had made his way down the tortuous mountain track. He made all speed to try to reach the Persian Khan, knowing that the lives of his father, his uncle, and his servant depended on him. He stumbled over boulders, tore his way through undergrowth, until at last, torn, bleeding, and exhausted, he arrived at the outskirts of the Persian camp. There, he was immediately intercepted by the sentries. He begged them to take him to the presence of the Khan. An officer was sent for. He was dressed in barbaric splendor, and Marco Polo begged him to take him before the Khan. At last, the prisoner was taken to a silken tent. He was pushed inside and there he saw the Khan, seated on a gold and silver throne. Two splendid sentries stood before the Khan. They crossed their spears as Marco Polo entered. Then the Khan spoke.
Strange man, who are you? Why did you demand speech with me?
My name is Marco Polo. I come from Venice, but I have been a prisoner at the castle of Prince Alloerdan.
You are a spy. You have come here to learn the strength of my army.
Most noble Khan, I swear that I am not a spy. My father, my uncle, my servant are imprisoned in the castle of Prince Alloerdan. And I can tell you how to reach that castle without exposing your men to danger and death.
You lie.
By the Christian God, I speak the truth.
You are a Christian, and yet you speak my tongue?
My father is a great traveler, most noble Khan. He speaks nearly all the languages which are known to the world. Since I was a child, I have learned strange foreign languages.
I am the mighty Khan of Persia. I am the brother of the great Kublai Khan of China. But I am a fighting man. I lead my forces into battle. I see you gaze at my gold and silver throne. It is carried for me wherever I go. I never forget that I am the ruler of many men. By raising my hand, I could order your death.
Oh, I beg that you spare my life. Let me lead your men to victory. I hate Prince Alloerdan, the old man of the mountain, and I alone can lead you to victory.
Your words ring true. Let my soldiers put up their spears. Come closer, that I may look on you.
I am torn and bruised and bleeding because of the hazardous journey which I took down the mountain. I beg you, give me an army. Give me men at once. My father, my uncle are in danger.
Many attempts have been made to seize the castle of the old man of the mountain. I swore that I would lay siege to the castle. Swore that I would not return to my own kingdom until this scourge had been destroyed.
The scourge can be destroyed, but haste is necessary, most noble lord.
A wise man from the east read my fortune in the stars. He said that a tall, fair, strange man would lead me to my present victory. But he said that many moons ago. I had almost forgotten it.
Why, I am tall and fair, and I swear that I will lead you to victory. Bid your men follow me. I know a path by which we may enter the castle without raising any alarm. They think they are safe.
Mayhap you speak to the truth.
I do, sir.
Come before me again tomorrow, and I will tell you my decision.
Most noble and exalted Khan, you must attack tonight. By tomorrow, my absence from the castle will be discovered. They will set a guard on that path.
You say that because you wish to save your friends who are prisoners of the old man of the mountain. Why should I risk my army, my men, because of the wild story of a stranger? Let him be taken from my presence.
Wait, wait. I beg of you, wait. Please, let me speak again. Oh, please, sir. Bid your men unhand me.
Unhand him. Well, stranger, what else have you to say?
If I lead you to disaster, then my life is forfeit. And if I cannot lead your men to victory tonight, then bid them sever my head from my shoulders. I pledge my life that I am speaking the truth.
Men do not gamble with their lives. So be it. You shall have your chance to lead my soldiers to victory. I will send for my captains now. And mayhap, when night falls, we may start on this journey. Go now. I shall be guided by my advisors.
That night, Niccolo Polo and his brother Matteo and Benno still walked the grounds of the castle. They realized that the attackers had been repelled, and they heard the voice of Prince Alloerdan as he boasted and exulted on the prowess of his warriors. The black pall of night descended. The stars were in the sky, and still the three Venetians roamed the grounds of the castle. Suddenly, they were brought to a halt.
Captives, where have you been? The prince has searched everywhere for you.
Oh, noble sir,
We have been watching the battle, ready to offer our aid if it was needed.
Your aid was not needed. The attackers were repulsed many hours ago. Where is the fourth member of your party?
You mean, noble sir, you mean my son Marco Polo. Why, he is in the castle resting.
Oh, there. Have the four Venetians been found?
Three of them are here, most noble lord.
I am coming now. Hold them there.
Oh, my master. I fear that the end is very near for us. I fear for us.
Marco, just keep quiet and leave this to me.
Well, where is Marco Polo? Hours ago, I ordered that he should be sent to me.
He has returned to the castle.
You lie! I have just come from the castle.
Benno, just go and tell Master Marco that we desire him here at once.
Bid your servant remain here. I know that Marco Polo is not in the castle. It has been searched throughout. Niccolo Polo, I order you to tell me where he can be found.
Oh, most high and noble prince. I do not know where he can be, but we will search for him now, most noble prince.
He has not been seen since the attack first started. You will tell me where he is, or you will be put to death.
I know not where he is.
You are useless to me, all three of you. He shall be found and killed, but you shall die first here. Seize them and put them to death!
The Adventures of Marco Polo on Tuned To Yesterday, a 1940 syndicated episode. Next, a broadcast of Firefighters, episode 12 in the syndicated series from November 29th, 1949.
Five bells. Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A five-alarm fire. Five bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll.
Let's go. Firefighters!
Presenting Firefighters, the true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the Demon of Fire. In just a minute, we'll take you to the corner of Clark and Montague, where Tim Collins, rookie fireman, lies on the sidewalk, wrapped up in a blanket to protect him from the after effects of an overdose of smoke and fumes. And beside him lies the talkative watchman of the warehouse, whom Tim has rescued from almost certain death by fire.
Let's go, firefighters! Let's go to the scene of the warehouse fire at Clark and Montague, where you remember Tim Collins, rookie fireman, has been put out of action by smoke and fumes after achieving the rescue of the warehouse watchman. Only a moment ago, Chief Cody ordered the third and fourth call fire companies to return to their firehouses. And as the trucks and engines roll away, he ordered...
First and second call companies, stand by to overhaul that wreckage.
Battalion Chief Mandeville reporting, sir. Shall I take over now?
All right, Mandeville. I want to get a line on what started this fire.
Well, there's no doubt that the third floor was the point of origin, Chief.
I'm going to question that watchman young Collins brought out of the fourth floor. When your boys overhaul that building, I want them to watch for signs of arson.
Yes, sir. Otherwise, we overhaul as usual?
As usual. Make sure that fire is dead. Rip out any walls or partitions where it might be lurking.
I'll keep a hose company at hand until there's no more danger of another outbreak.
And when you pull out, post a guard to protect this property until the owners take charge. That's all, Mandeville.
Yes, sir. You truckmen this way. Bring your hooks.
Chief Cody.
Huh? Oh, hello, Doctor. How is young Collins coming along?
He had a bad dose of smoke, Chief, but he's first rate now. He'll be ready for duty again tomorrow.
And that watchman, is he ready to talk yet?
He was wide awake and talking a blue streak to young Collins just a minute ago.
Oh, fine, fine. Now maybe we'll get a line on how that fire began.
This way, Chief Cody. I've got them both wrapped in blankets on the sidewalk across the street.
Right here, Doctor? Where's that watchman? All I see is Collins.
Well, I'll be... He's gone, blanket and all.
You're looking for Napoleon Bonaparte, Doctor?
What's that? doctor. Is this boy still delirious?
I'm all right, Chief Cody. That's his name, honest.
Napoleon Bonaparte.
That's right. That's what he gave me for the medical report. But, Collins, what happened to him? He wasn't in any shape to walk. Oh, not with that injured leg, sir. It was your assistant, doctor. They picked him up in the ambulance roll just after the 3rd and 4th fire companies pulled out.
Huh? Stealing my patient, eh? That man had a bad leg wound. I want to tend to it myself. So long, Chief.
Here. Hold on. How about Collins here?
I'll send him home for a good night's rest. If he isn't raring to go in the morning, I'll eat him alive. See you later, Chief.
Well, boy, that's what it is to be young and healthy. Napoleon Bonaparte. I wanted to talk to that fellow, find out where this fire started.
Battalion chief reporting, sir.
Oh, yes, Mandeville. Any line yet on how that fire started?
No signs of arson, Chief, but it's hard to tell.
The fire floor was thoroughly burned out, huh?
It was, Chief. We can tell the fire got a terrific start, possibly from some type of explosion.
Lucky that building was constructed to be fire-resistant, or the whole business would have collapsed, perhaps with our men inside.
Yes, sir. But the funny thing is, nothing stored in there was particularly explosive.
Oh, Chief Cody...
As you were, Private, I'm taking this officer's report.
Yes, sir.
Mandeville.
Yes, sir.
Have the salvage squad go over that floor inch by inch.
Right, Chief.
Have them identify every type of substance and material that was stored in that 3rd floor.
Yes, sir. I'll send them in there right away.
Explosion, was it? Well, you don't have an explosion without cause.
Chief Cody, sir. Private Collins reporting.
Yes, Private Collins, but you shouldn't be on your feet.
I've got to stand at attention to report, sir.
Well, you can sit at attention, can't you? Yeah. Keep that blanket around you now.
Yes, sir.
And make it fast. I've got a fire to investigate.
But Napoleon Bonaparte, I mean the watchman, sir. He told me all about it. He told me while we were lying here.
He did? Well, great clouds of smoke. Why didn't you say so?
Well, I...
Well, never mind. What did the watchman tell you?
Painters, sir. There were painters working in that floor, and they were supposed to finish the job a week ago.
I understood that whole floor had been closed, practically sealed up for the past week.
Well, yes, sir, waiting for the painters to come back and finish. Nobody's been in there but Napoleon, the watchman, and he said half a dozen cans of paint had been left uncovered, Chief.
Well, why didn't he cover them, if he's the watchman?
Well, he said that was the painter's job, sir, to keep those cans covered. He just didn't realize
didn't realize that fumes were spreading from those paint cans, spreading all through that area, until the 3rd floor of the warehouse was as dangerous as a bomb.
Well, that's the end of my report, Chief Cody. Some spark, a spark from almost any source, was enough to start that fire.
Collins, you've completed my investigation for me, lying here flat on your back on the sidewalk.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, if I... You see, I didn't mean to butt in. Exceed my duty, I mean.
Exceed your duty, Collins? Well, that's one thing no fireman can ever do, because there's no limit to his duty when it comes to preventing or fighting or investigating fire. No, boy, you've done just right.
Second call companies, pick up and pull out. Get back to your quarters.
Here, what are you doing, Collins? Sit down there.
Oh, I'm all right, Chief Cody. See, I can stand. I've got my strength back.
Yes, and where do you think you're going?
Well, the battalion chief just ordered the second call companies back to quarters.
Oh, and you think you're going back to the firehouse with old 3-1s, huh?
Well, that's my company, sir. I've got to show the men I can take it.
No, you don't. Kennedy. Lieutenant Kennedy.
Yes, sir?
Lieutenant, you've got a hard case on your hands here.
Who's that, sir? Young Hooksy Collins?
Young Hooksy?
That's what the boys are calling him, Chief, after the showing he made at his first fire.
Young Hooksy. Boy, that's what they called Ben Collins back in the old days. That's the name we gave your father.
Oh, gee, Well, good grief, I don't know what to say.
You don't need to say anything, Collins. Actions speak louder than words, you know.
You're in, boy. The men of Old 3-1s are behind you solid. Lieutenant, Private Collins is due for a layoff. He's to return to duty sometime tomorrow, at your discretion.
Yes, sir. Collins, you were posted for the 2nd platoon, but there's an opening in the 3rd.
The late night shift, sir, midnight to morning?
Midnight to 8 a.m. You'll sleep at the firehouse.
Yes, sir.
Report to me at 3-1s tomorrow night, then. And we'll be glad to have you with us. Hooksy?
Yes, sir.
We turn here, driver.
Chief Cody, you shouldn't be driving me home.
Why?
Well, the chief of the whole fire department giving the greenest rookie in the whole fire department a lift home, it isn't right.
Now, Collins, one thing you've got to learn.
Sir, what's that?
The You've got to learn not to tell the chief to do this and do that and don't do the other. I've been running this department well enough since you were in knee breeches. Yes, sir, ever since your father was chief in the old days.
I guess I was kind of fresh, sir.
Ah, now, don't take the old man too seriously. Besides, I wanted to deliver you safe to your mother. It isn't every day Ben Collins' boy rolls to his first fire and does his family proud.
Yeah, well, I've been worrying about that, chief, about Mom seeing me like this, black as charcoal with a blanket for a cape.
Well, your mother isn't the kind to throw up her hands and fall in a faint at the sight of a little soot.
Yeah, but maybe she'll be worried.
Wait and see, boy. I've been a friend of the family since way back, you know. Wait and see how she takes it when I bring you home.
Gosh, if Mom sees me like this, Chief Cody, all soot and smoke and...
Well, here she is. Good evening, Mrs. Collins.
Why, Bob Cody, it's you and...
Mom, don't you know me?
Glory be, it's my Tim. Well, Tim, you look like a scarecrow.
It's Tim, all right. Home from his first fire.
Is he hurt?
No, Mom,
Hush, boy, if there's smoke in your lungs. Chief, help him over the threshold. The boy's falling asleep on his feet.
Well, it seems that Tim Collins, rookie fireman, is in good hands and safe at home. But the exciting fact is that tomorrow night he is to report to Old 3-1's Hook and Ladder Company 111 for the 3rd Platoon. And that means that he will sleep in the firehouse, ready to hit the pole the moment the firehouse call bell rouses his company from sleep. For Tim's experience as a fireman on the late night shift, listen to our next true-to-life episode of... The Firefighters! In just a minute, Chief Bob Cody will tell all you boys and girls how you can help the firefighters in your own hometown. And now Chief Bob Cody with a special assignment for all young firefighters. Chief Cody.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Chief Cody with your special assignment. Attention, firefighters. You are to inspect your home... and your family's garage, or any other outbuildings, for cans of paint. Now check carefully. Be sure the lid of each can of paint is in place. Now if it isn't, put the cover on and fasten it tight. Remember, the fumes rising from a paint can may cause an explosion and a rapidly spreading fire that can be disastrous. Protect your family from this hazard. Well, that is all. And goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back on the same station the next time you hear...
That's it. Let's roll.
Firefighters, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 29, 1949, a syndicated recording. At the time, that program, obviously geared toward the junior set, was heard at just before dinner, between 5 and 6 in the evening, and competed with other very popular programs for the age group of the day, like Bobby Benson, The Challenge of the Yukon, Jack Armstrong, The All-American Boy, and Tom Mix and his Ralston Straight Shooters show. We now close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with The Man in the Iron Mask, Episode 6 from 1948.
The Man in the Iron Mask.
Edmund Marchiali has fallen in love with Marguerite, the daughter of a peasant farmer.
But his guardian, Georges Chammar, is most perturbed, especially when he hears that Edmund wants to marry this girl. Unable to change the boy's mind, he sends for Cardinal Mazarin, perhaps the most powerful man in France. And the cardinal says that he will deal with the situation. Sometime later in the Chammar castle on the hill...
Oh, Monsieur Edmund, Monsieur Edmund.
Why, what is it, Papa Frederick? Has something happened to Marguerite?
You have heard?
No, I've heard nothing. But tell me quickly, what is wrong? Is she ill?
She is gone, Monsieur Edmund, gone.
What do you mean, gone?
They came for her, soldiers and the captain. They took her away in a coach.
What?
I did what I could to try and prevent them, but they thrust me aside.
But why? Why? What is the meaning of it all?
I do not know, monsieur. They told her she was under arrest and that in the name of the King of France she must go with them. Oh, monsieur, she has done nothing. She is a good girl, a devoted daughter. There is nothing of dishonesty, nor malice, nor wrongdoing in this daughter of mine, and yet now they have taken her away.
And you don't know where?
They wouldn't tell. They wouldn't say. Oh, monsieur, find her for me. Find her for me. You say you love my daughter. You have influence. Perhaps if you could discover the meaning of it all, why they have taken her...
Of course I'll find out, Father Frederick. Don't be upset anymore. I've got to find her. I must. Wait here.
Where are you going?
To see my uncle. You will soon find out the truth. There's some mistake. Perhaps they thought that Marguerite was someone else. Marguerite, of all people under arrest. Quite fantastic. Wait, Papa Frederick. Uncle.
Oh, Edmund, how you startled me. I was dozing off. What's the time?
I don't know, Uncle, and I don't care. Uncle, something terrible has happened. Marguerite has been arrested.
Marguerite? Oh, who is Marguerite?
Oh, you know, Uncle. Of course you know. The girl I love. The girl I'm going to marry. She was arrested earlier this evening. Mm-hmm. There's been some awful mistake. I need your help, Uncle.
But how can I help?
Papa Frederick said that a troop of horsemen, soldiers, and a carriage arrived at the farm and took her away. They were acting in the name of the King of France. Of course, there's a mistake. I know you have friends at court, Uncle. Will you find out quickly, what this is all about and where they've taken Marguerite? I must go to her at once. Poor darling Marguerite.
But Edmund, what can I do? I know nothing about this matter. Perhaps this girl has done some wrong.
Oh, that's absurd, Uncle. I'd take my life on her.
But you're in love, my dear boy. Who are you to judge?
You shall not suggest. Why, Uncle George, I always thought that you were a judge of character. This girl is the sweetest, the loveliest person I've ever met in my life. She's completely incapable of doing anything wrong. Uncle, you've got to do something and do it quickly. You have friends at court, in the army, powerful, influential friends.
Very well, Edmund. I will do what I can. I shall send letters off tomorrow.
Tomorrow? But you must do it now, Uncle. Write letters now and I'll make arrangements to send a messenger off to Paris. Or better still, I'll take the letters myself.
Take the letters yourself? No. Messenger, of course. I'll get up straight away and write letters to several people. Don't you worry. He'll find a little girl for you. I'll attend to the matter straight away. My dear Cardinal, your plans apparently have been carried out. Peasant farmer's daughter has been taken this night to the Bastille, as you arranged. But my ward in a frenzy has demanded that I write letters to influential friends in Paris to find out why Marguerite was arrested and where she is. These letters I have written, and below is a list of the names of the people to whom I have written. It now rests with you to inform these people of your wishes in this matter, and there the matter rests. You will understand, however, that I must make a show with my ward, a show of doing my best to help him. And believe me, I am deeply grieved at his distress, for he is as a son to me. Yes, well, this letter will go with the others. Poor Edmund. If I had my way, perhaps he would have his Marguerite.
The scene now changes to Spain and to the court of Philip IV, whose eldest daughter, the Infanta Maria Teresa, is already involved in talks between France and Spain. We find the dark-haired Maria in her boudoir on this sunny morning, closely studying an almost life-size portrait. Standing with her is another dark-haired young woman, not quite so beautiful as Maria Teresa, but there is a certain stateliness about her, and her high cheekbones give a hint of arrogance. This is Maria Teresa's maid-in-waiting, Frasquita Carlos.
Well, Frasquita, you haven't given your opinion yet.
What does my opinion count, Your Highness? I am merely a maid-in-waiting.
But you are my friend too, Frasquita, and I value your opinion.
Well, I'm pleasantly surprised. I had no idea that the young king of France was so handsome.
You do think he's handsome. You really do, Frasquita?
If I could marry even a poor man as good-looking as that, I would consider myself very lucky.
I suppose, really, Frasquita, I haven't any choice. Spain has been forced to sue for peace with France, and it seems that, in return, I must marry this young king.
Better a young king than an old one with a paunch. I think you're extremely lucky. We both know of some marriages that were not attractive.
Yes, I know. But I am so frightened, Frasquita. If the negotiations are completed, I'll be sent to France to marry this man whom I've never met, I've never seen. I shall be amongst foreigners, strangers. Perhaps I shall never see Spain again. Here, as you know, my life has been one of seclusion. I am not used to the court and to the extravagances which I believe are practiced in Paris and at Versailles.
You should count yourself among the luckier ones. Personally, I would prefer the glitter and glamour of a French court to the tawdriness of the Spanish...
Frasquita!
Sorry, Your Highness. You should not have said that.
You are always so bitter, aren't you? Why, Frasquita?
Am I bitter?
Yes. Yet I keep you with me because there is a certain strength in you. Something which I like. Perhaps you will come to the French court with me. Will you, Frasquita?
I do as I am told.
And now I must find my dear father and tell him about the portrait. He is anxious to know what my opinions are. I'll be back soon, Frasquita.
Yes, Your Highness. Bitter. If she only knew how I despise that simpering little doll. Within her grasp is power. The power of two thrones. And she has no idea how to use it. While I... No wonder I'm bitter. Just a servant.
Still no news, Father Frederick.
Each time I hear a footstep outside, I say to myself, it is Marguerite. It is my little daughter come back. Oh, monsieur, they must find her soon. They must.
I have done everything possible. So has my guardian. He has been wonderful.
Papa Frederick,
you may not know this, but when first I took Marguerite to the castle, he was very angry. He told me he would be very displeased if I married your daughter. But now... If you could see the letters that he has written.
They have been delivered?
Yes, they are in the hands of influential people in Paris now. A general, two court favorites, and several others.
But Marguerite has been gone 3 weeks. Anything can happen in 3 weeks, Monsieur Edmund.
I know, Father Frederick. I've said very little to you, but I've spent many sleepless nights wondering what they
doing to him. At times I feel that my head is going to burst. You see, I'm so helpless. Sometimes I wonder if it might help matters if I went to Paris myself.
Would it be possible for you to have an audience with the king?
The king?
Yes, monsieur. When Marguerite was arrested, she was arrested in the name of the king. My tired brain has tried to reason that perhaps the king himself ordered this arrest. There was a paper flourish.
A paper?
Yes. When the captain made the arrest, he waved this paper and declared that Marguerite was to be arrested in the name of the King of France.
The King of France? The highest power of all. Why, Papa Frederick, this might lead me to Marguerite straight away. I'll ride for Paris at once.
What will be the outcome of Edmund Marchiali's resolution? Since it would appear that there is a mystery surrounding his birth, perhaps a visit to Paris, to the court, and an audience with the king may bring forward surprising results. Make sure you hear the next absorbing chapter of The Man in the Iron Mask.
The Man in the Iron Mask, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated broadcast, number 6 from 1948. And that does it for this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time as we continue these tales from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBonnier. Thanks for tuning in.